On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Almost a little late on the third switch there, but we're here. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour. This is the horn. It is a frigid sixth day of January 2014, the second broadcast of the new year 2014, arbitrary though it may be. Goodness me, it is cold where we are, and there's a whole lot of the country where it's cold where you are as well. So then, and looking at what my buddies in Wisconsin are putting up with, and my friends in Minnesota and the upper Midwest generally are putting up with, I feel like a bit of a ninny sitting here complaining about the fact that it's, you know, five outside. But it is. Outside the Horn color weather window, it's five. Here inside the studio, it is a toasty 61 degrees. And once again, I reiterate the fact that my feet are comfy warm, so there will be no complaining even on a night like this. No siree. Thank you. Thank you, Sparky. So, yeah, let's get things rolling. Of course, you know that HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to participate in the rousing, rollicking horn chat room. Oh, rub it in. Sure, Lottie. It was 55 here today, he said. Meaning Boston. GK's in the room. So is Kathy. So is Jan. So is Lottie. Hey, Waggy. And, of course, Sparky is along as well. Sparky and Lottie are longtime veteran chat room moderators. And you should be there, too, if you want. Please feel free to jump in. The chat room link is at headonradionetwork.com, as mentioned, as well as is the Listen Live button. If you want to find the other listen links, if you want to listen on a PC that's not Windows-based, you can run on over to head on there to whiterosesociety.org/Kincaid, KINCAID.html, and get some, and there are streaming links over there for things that aren't Windows Media Player. GK noting it's a balmy minus 23 degrees Fahrenheit in Minnesota. I was thinking about my friend in Wisconsin. You would think it had below into serious, you know, low numbers before to hear the for-profit media. It is dangerous. And I think we can make a cultural observation that it is dangerous, particularly because of how we live. We are not accustomed to dealing with the seasons. Because I was just thinking about my friends up in northern Wisconsin and their ancestors saying, wait a minute, we dealt with cold like this for 15,000 years. And that's the one thing that the for-profit media misses. Cold like this is not new. Now, cold like this with the polar Arctic vortex sort of coming unzipped and pouring all of its oomph out, that is a little bit new. That's climate change related. But don't try telling that to a teabagger, or a birther, or a deather, or a tenther, or a moran, or a booger eater, or a pig licking, because they don't want to hear it. No. They're grasshoppers. We're the ants. I had a note from Scott in Sweden. He said, hey, Bob-a-ree-Bob, here's one for the right-wingers mocking global warming because y'all's having our Arctic weather. Sweden's winter heat wave. Yeah, that, they haven't been talking a lot about that over on Radio Rwanda, have they? Comes from a website called The Local, Sweden's News in English. Sweden is experiencing one of its warmest Decembers on record. As of last month, according to meteorologists, as record high temperatures have spawned signs of spring in the middle of winter. In Sweden. And just in case W is listening in, no, that's not Switzerland or Swaziland. That's Sweden. Ja, svenska, right? Signs of spring in the middle of the winter. At The Local, they write, while the... And, you know, maybe this is some comfort, I don't know, to people who are experiencing below zero temperatures here in January. While the hurricane-strength winds of Christmas weekend's storms left many Swedes stranded and without power, that didn't stop the mercury from reaching new heights in several locations across the country. Wait, hurricane-strength winds, Christmas weekend, Sweden... I mean, I don't want to bust in on the shtick from over at MSNBC, but one of these things is not like the other. One of these things does not belong. Hurricane strength winds, Christmas weekend, Sweden. In Delsbo, in eastern Sweden, a high temperature of 10.3 degrees Celsius on December 27th smashed a 60-year-old record. In Gävle, also in eastern Sweden, depending on how you like your vowels, Tuesday's high temperature of 11.3 degrees marks the second warmest December temperature since measurements began in 1858. Then there's Karlstad in central Sweden. New record in December warmth, 10.7 degrees on the 26th. According to the Svenska Dagbladet, a quote from Martin Hedberg, a meteorologist, Martin said, it's unusually mild, almost warm if you compare to the past. Stockholm has been 3 degrees above normal, but Norrbotten in northern Sweden really stands out with 7 to 10 degrees above normal. And when you say a phrase, use words like northern Sweden, yeah, you're talking, you know, north. Heck, that makes me wonder if they've been able to build the ice hotel this year. December 2011 was the fourth warmest in Stockholm in 150 years. Yeah. Now this is a 2011 story. But meanwhile, the leftover heat of summer is also giving hell to the UK. Lots of stormy weather there on the island made by nature for itself. Kate Ravelius, writing for The Guardian, it started with St. Jude's Day storm on 28 October, then there was Javier on the 5th and 6th December, and most recently we've seen Christian, Dirk, and Eric slamming our shores over the festive season. Between them, these winter storms have brought misery to huge swaths of the UK, flooding hundreds of homes, cutting the power to thousands, and bringing much of the transport system to a halt. But how unusual is this weather and what's behind it all? Weather statistics show it's been an unusually active storm season. The St. Jude's Day storm was one of the strongest to have hit southern England in the last 40 years. A place with a Gaelic name in Scotland that I am not even going to assay pronouncing. recorded 142 mile an hour winds as a result of storm Xaver, X-A-V-E-R, help. With the Dirk storm, Dirk, Stig, Nasty, and who was the other huddle? Oh, well. The lowest barometric pressure, 936.8 millibars of mercury in the British Isles, the lowest point that had been recorded since 1886. Nah, the planet's fine. Nothing to see here. Move along. So Scott continues, the source of all this woe seems to be the summer heat stored in the North Atlantic has pushed northward, butting itself into where the frigid polar air mass cap ought to reside more or less evenly atop the globe and shoving that cold air south over the North American continent, while this northward trending North Atlantic warm air bounces off over we Vikings and the Ruskies a long way into western and central Siberia. By the way, an apology going out. Geographic ignorance, and I hate it in myself. No, Minsk is not in Russia, and thank you for clearing that up for me. Minsk is in Belarus. Got it. I'll never forget it. But anyway, going back to what Scott said, the source of all this seems to be the summer heat stored in the North Atlantic has pushed northward, butting itself into where the frigid polar air mass cap ought to reside more or less evenly atop the globe and shoving that cold air south over the North American continent, while this northward trending North Atlantic warm air bounces off over we Vikings and the Ruskies a long way into western and central Siberia. Thus, your side of the Atlantic's too cold air is matched by an equal area on our side by too warm air. In either case, it's too something or other. That's me, editorially. Scott continues, what is really scary is that this new set of conditions is posed to repeat often in the future. We all may be getting a lot of these winters, or, as the models predict, another wild set of conditions may stabilize over a season, giving yet another weird winter pattern. We are talking about new sets of formerly unseen equilibria generating more intense, quasi-stable seasonal conditions. The models predict increasing variability, i.e. wilder climate mood swings, and we're just getting started with climatic variations, like the world's strongest tornado and typhoon, both recorded in the last year. Tell the idiots at Fox News Radio Rwanda that global warming means, one, spherical, two, of relating to or involving the entire world, worldwide, source Webster's Dictionary. But, yeah, signed our buddy Scott. And that is from our buddy Scott. I despair of explaining much of anything to the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, floor-rolling, strychnine-swilling, tongue-speaking weirdos over at Radio Rwanda. Ain't gonna happen. Because if it doesn't happen to them, it isn't real. Little weather reports coming in here, hither and thither. 59 here in the Sacramento area so far. Sure, rub it in. Well, okay, great, you know. I got six. I feel like Charlie Brown and the Great Pumpkin. I got a rock. But I must admit there's a certain austere beauty to cold like this. The trick lies in the preparedness, therefore. It will be cold in this house overnight, but that's okay. Lots of covers. Just got to make sure we've got a drip in the faucet. Yeah, drip. Check in from Wisconsin. Jenny writing in. Minus 13 here at the moment. Not going to stay there, though, is it, Jenny? There will be a warming trend here in a couple of days. We're predicted to get up into the mid-50s by the weekend, I think. Climatological mood swings, indeed. Our friend Brad Friedman pointed out just before airtime that a wave of climate denial is gripping the nation. I love the headline. Another cold blast of global warming is a hoax. Nonsense to grip parts of the gullible U.S. Oh, for heaven's sakes. But it's true.
Now look, it's cold outside, so much for global warming.
That's amazing, Jan just pointing out. It is only 10 degrees colder in Barrow, Alaska than it is where I am right now. I got a feeling all the seasons are going to be a merry chase. And seeing as how that one hasn't perfected his Kenyan socialist Muslim deep-seated hatred of white people anti-colonialist climate machine yet, just kind of strap in, right? Jeremy noting from Vermont, it was 47 here today. Tomorrow, 19 or less. Nothing to see here. Move along. Exactly, citizen. Exactly. Marty pointing out, too bad the cold didn't help Green Bay against San Francisco. No, it didn't. It didn't. And what's worse, one of the Niners players took a point, made a point of severely slurring the place 30 miles from Green Bay where the Niners stayed in advance of the football game. Stevens Point, was it? Referred to it as a shithole. Twice the guy did. I can't remember which guy it was. And on the second occasion said he was not asking the question as to whether Stevens Point was one, rhetorically. I'm surprised dude could use the word rhetorically. I figured he was the type just to masturbate a word into a sentence, whether he knew what it meant or not. Sheesh. Oh, Darlene, no apologies necessary. Darlene was having a magnificent conversation, and you can have one, too, with Dr. Bill O'Brien in the waning moments of his program leading up to the beginning of this one. Darlene says, sorry to horn in on the horn, Bob. Obviously, I totally lost track of time with Dr. Bill. I feel awful. But thanks. Don't feel awful. It was a wonderful conversation. And today being Monday, the 6th of November, I should tell... November? Where'd I get that? January. God. Today being Monday, the 6th of January, I should probably note that... we have a challenge on the table this evening, and it's fitting insofar as the weather up there is frightful. But it is time for Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. I know for a fact because I get the emails. Shirley always gets a charge out of the way you guys respond to her challenge. There's $150 on the table tonight. So long as there are 150, there are people willing to fill in that $150 offer. We'll start it by noting that we are already at 140 instead of 150, and thanks very much to Asa for making that happen. So Shirley's freezing, frigid Wisconsin challenge is in fact on the table this evening. And thanks again so very much to Shirley. Now, it is really, and for true, it is Moran Monday here. And dear God, you know, one of the nice things about the cold weather is that they, by necessity, the Morans have to slow down a little bit so you can examine them in greater detail. Some of that slowing down actually happened on the TV box last night with Leslie Stahl. whom I frequently mistake for Andrea Mitchell, whom I frequently mistake for Diane Sawyer. It's not a sexist thing. It's just that they're all spouting the same bilious for-profit media drivel. I think it was Diane Sawyer who gave America the phrase Mountain Dew mouth to explain why children in central Appalachia have their teeth rot out in their heads before they actually fall out as a process of the adult teeth coming in behind them. She attributed it to mamas giving babies Mountain Dew in their baby bottles, never noting for an instant the fact that a lot of these children are growing up in areas where mountaintop removal is taking place and horrible, horrible poisonous chemicals go into their local, often well water supplies. But okay, so that's her. But now, I get them all confused. But in this case, I think I've got this nailed down. And this nomination came from Marty. Who pointed out the story, and I had also posted it on my Facebook page. The hatchet job. I mean, you can't call this journalism. And there was no pretense of objectivity whatsoever. It was nothing short of a miserable little smear perpetrated by Leslie Stahl on the, what do we call it? The renewable energy industry. And it was a Lulu. Over at Joe Rahm's Climate Progress blog at thinkprogress.org, Joe Rahm does a generally very good job, he pointed out clean technology is booming by every key indicator, but you would never know that from Sunday's absurd 60 Minutes piece touting an imaginary clean tech crash. There are even convenient charts to go with Joe Rahm's piece over at Climate Progress, showing increases in percentage of deployment of renewable energy alongside decreases in module cost per watt hour. And one curve is going up while another bar graph is trending down. But CBS, no. Here's how for-profit media expert professional journalist Leslie Stahl described it. It was a voiceover over photographs of solar panels, biofuels, wind turbines, the like. It's called clean tech. And the new technologies that were developed in the energy sector were supposed to create jobs and help America break its reliance on fossil fuels. The government supported it, and billions of tax dollars were spent. So, how is the investment going? Anybody want to guess what the first word is? I mean, this story... No, it's not Benghazi, damn it. Close. This is an earlier right wing bete noir than Benghazi. Solyndra went through $500 million before it failed. Then I'm going to give you a list of other failures: Abound Energy, Beacon Power, Fisker, VPG. I'm exhausted. Really? You're exhausted, Leslie? Sitting in a booth recording a voiceover? Damn. somebody get her a chair or something. Oh, I bet she's got one while she's sitting there reading her exhausted voiceover in the audio recording booth. But that's where they went.
Yeah, see? Clean energy is dying. It's dead. It's awful. It's terrible. Money has been spent. The companies have gone under.
Meanwhile, more and more energy in this country is produced by clean energy. I mean, it's surprising that when they finally put her on camera, she wasn't wearing one of those NASCAR suits, you know, with all the advertiser patches all over it. You know, maybe Koch Brothers prominently across the center of her chest, and ExxonMobil on one side, and Shell, and BP, and ConocoPhillips, and, Frack America, and Alpha Natural Resources, because that's what we need. That's what we need. More fossil fuels burned. You know, they are laughing their asses off, in case you're wondering. They are laughing their asses off at the natural gas companies and the coal companies and the oil companies. They love it when temperatures dip this low. They absolutely adore it. They don't, and I was watching my Facebook feed today. They don't do what progressive people do. To wit, all day long I saw post after post after post from people saying, if you go out, carry an old coat, carry an old pair of gloves. If you see somebody who needs them, for God's sakes, give it to them. It may be the difference between life and death. Well, the hydrocarbon fools.
Wait a minute, what? They ain't buying energy from us? F them. Let them freeze to death in the dark. Moochers.
Because, you know, morality and social conscience just doesn't really run that high up onto the right-wing list. Especially when you're dealing with oil, gas, coal. Sorry. It was about 4:45 when I heard today's mountaintop removal blast reverberate across the hills. Well, this wasn't one of those big overblast affairs. It was just a little boomer. But it was there. It was absolutely there. Morans? Oh, we got morans. Dear God, we've got morans. By the way, hey, thanks. Thanks, Jenny. We are now at $120 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you. And that was a Wisconsin response to Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Double thanks. So 12 more folks, $10 a piece, and we're done. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address if you prefer to use that. Morans? Oh, stop it. Morans, we got morans. And one of my favorites, and you just, because he's so good at being one, is David Brooks. You can count on this guy to say something moronic every time he applies sharpened stick and batshit to paper or types or uses the newfangled computer box. Whatever he does, you can rest assured David Brooks is going to fulminate out some meretricious BS. But he really kind of outdid himself this weekend. David Brooks is upset.
What are you people, on dope?
Yeah, that's the sum and substance of David Brooks' column from the for-profit media empire known as the New York Times. The piece was titled Weed. Bummer Dunlop. So you have to say it like that. Bummer Dunlop. In which David Brooks was able to put aside concerns for just about everything else that is wrong with the planet to inform us that he knows damned good and well that the states of Colorado and Washington have unleashed the Kraken upon America by, I don't know, maybe, you know what, maybe there's a strain of seedless, green, stinky weed out there that's actually called Kraken. Who knows? But he writes, or wrote, on the second day of January, actually, "For a little while in my teenage years, my friends and I smoked marijuana. It was fun. I have some fond memories of us all being silly together. I think those moments of uninhibited frolic deepened our friendships." Really? Frolic? Frolic and play the Eskimo way as we wander around a winter wonderland? What?
I'm so wasted!
Yeah. But then we all sort of moved away from it. I don't remember any big group decision that we should give up weed. See how hippie he is? He calls it weed after first calling it marijuana. Anybody ever tell David Brooks that marijuana is a made-up word? They had to come up with something besides calling it everything that it was being called back when they were criminalizing it. So it became marijuana, which is a sort of Hispanicization of Mary Jane. Right? Oh, God. The stupid is strong in this one. But he calls it just sort of petered out, and before long we were scarcely using it. And notice how it's not we were not using it, it was we were scarcely using it. I'm scarcely using it to this day. I'm scarcely using it while I type this miserable little screed talking down to the little dope smokers out there. And then he trots out that it's addictive in about 1 in 6 teenagers, that smoking and driving is a good way to get yourself killed. Well, yeah, if you're doing 75 miles an hour on the freeway trying to de-seed a quarter bag of Mexican on the fold-out of the old Frampton Comes Alive album, yeah, that's a little dangerous. Yeah, I guess you could get yourself killed. But it reminds me of the old Robin Williams bit where he said he was pulled over by a California Highway Patrol motorcycle cop, and he said, and I rolled the window down, and this cloud billowed out, smelled like a Colombian sauna, and the cop said, "Why are you driving so slow? You on the way to the dentist, sir?" Yeah. I think we gave it up first, because we each had a few embarrassing incidents. Oh, Muffy, the baby is wasted again. Stoned people do stupid things. That's basically the point. So are we to understand that the entire Iraq war, which David Brooks supported, got started because stoned people do stupid things? Because I guess otherwise you have to say that Count Dicula and Dim Leader... I don't think they were horking up a number when they came up with the idea. No. I smoked one day during lunch and then had to give a presentation in English class. I stumbled through it, incapable of putting together simple phrases, feeling like a total loser.
Hey, totally, dude.
It is still one of those embarrassing memories that pop up unbidden at 4 in the morning. He doesn't say whether he says it's an embarrassing memory, but he doesn't say whether he even giggles just a little bit. No, and then, like, I thought I was being so profound when I was, like, saying, no, you know, like,
if you start... Now, I gave this report in English class, and I couldn't get through it, and I was trying to explain to them, and, like, the high people understood me, but the straight people didn't, about how if you start Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon at the same time you're watching Wizard of Oz, it is, like, totally cosmic. We gave it up second, I think, because one member of our clique became a full-on stoner. Really, did they have cliques when they were being stoners? Or were they just, like, hanging? He became a full-on stoner. He may have been the smartest of us, but something sad happened to him as he sunk deeper into pothead life, surrounded by empty Cheetos bags on his parents' floor in the basement, you know, sitting there with his headphones and his 8-track tape player, you know, listening over and over and over again to Rick Wakeman's Journey to the Center of the Earth, or maybe old, you know, like dead tapes that he would get and stuff, and like he wouldn't come out anymore because he kept just, you know, he's like, you gotta listen, man. Jerry is so profound. What a supercilious piece of crap this guy is. Finally, I think we had a vague sense that smoking weed was not exactly something you were proud of yourself for. It's like being proud of wearing socks. I mean, that's not the purpose. I guess David Brooks would prefer that those little preppies with whom he was quietly getting stoned were, you know, I don't know, drinking gin like their parents. We aged out. We left marijuana behind. I don't have any problems, so I get high from time to time, but I guess on the whole, I think being stoned is not a particularly uplifting form of pleasure and should be discouraged more than encouraged. No, you know what's really an uplifting form of pleasure? Making up bullshit about restaurants that didn't exist and money you didn't spend in a little town in Pennsylvania that you have decided is... No, he really did this. What was the book? It was in the early aughts. Yeah, I don't think this is... Okay, a little affirmation coming in. Jim noting, hell, I took my orals for my master... he's referring to the bong with stirrups and the aquarium pump that would just blast you. So, David Brooks is a Morian. And after all of that stuff about how, you know, we just walked away from the weed... There's not a word in there about how decriminalization will save a vast amount of money just in terms of the non-violent, non-offensive, not really criminals at all people who won't be going to prison in Colorado and Washington or any other state if we could just legalize the damn stuff, you know, cannabis. No. No, he's upset about... Well, he's upset about legalization. Because something happened to him, I guess, when he stopped getting stoned back when he was frolicking. And he became a serious person. We now have a couple of states, Colorado and Washington, that have gone into the business of effectively encouraging drug use. Well, is that what... Are they encouraging nicotine addiction when they allow cigarettes to be sold? Are they encouraging alcoholism because you can buy a nice bottle of cab down the street instead of having to stand at some blind alley and, you know, give the secret knock and, you know, stick your tongue out a certain way and give the W.C. Fields high sign in order to get your jug? By making weed legal, they are creating a situation in which the price will drop substantially. Well, F me, isn't that free market economics? Isn't that how it's supposed to work? One Rand study, I hope he doesn't mean Rand Paul, Aqua Buddha. One Rand study suggests that prices could plummet by up to 90% before taxes and such. As prices drop and legal fears go away, usage is bound to increase.
Good! David, go to Colorado. Buy the strongest, funkiest stuff you can get, put it in a hookah, light it up, and loosen up. Frolic, even.
This is simple economics, and it is confirmed by much research. Colorado and Washington, in other words, are producing more users. In legalizing weed, citizens of Colorado are indeed enhancing individual freedom. Libertarians, yay! Wolverines! But they are also nurturing a moral ecology.
What? Edith? See, this is what happens when you start your column and the fifth martini has kicked in by the time you've gotten to the end.
Oh, God, these olives are magnificent.
Nurturing a moral ecology
in which it is a bit harder to be the sort of person most of us want to be.
Because we all want to be Mr. Hond and not Jeff Spicoli, right? God bless America.
Well, I don't want any stuck-up sticky leaks here. But apparently, they got you got... Oh, that's pathetic. Now, counter that against something that some less responsible members of the for-profit media ran with. It came from the Daily Current, which I have subsequently found out is a parody site that's not quite anywhere near as funny as The Onion. And mainly because it verges over a little too close to actual reality. I saw shocked, horrified posts on Facebook over the weekend over the citing to this story. Marijuana overdoses kill 37 in Colorado on first day of legalization. And this is what I mean by it playing a little too close to the line on reality. Colorado is reconsidering its decision to legalize recreational pot following the deaths of dozens due to marijuana overdoses. See, that should be the first hint that this is a gag. It's a yuck piece. It's a ha-ha. It's a funny. Because, and I don't want to put too fine a point on it here, there's no such thing as a marijuana overdose. Oh, but one in six teenagers can become addicted.
To what?
I mean, I will add this caveat. I see in the stores that they now sell these wrappers for your blunts. See, I'm using that hip speak. A blunt being something that back in the day, you know, when David Brooks was frolicking, he probably would have referred to as a doobie. Only doobies were rolled in paper, whereas a blunt is made of this god-awful crapulastic pseudo-tobacco stuff and is frequently flavored with peach or apple or berry or something, but is in fact nicotine laden. It's a really, really cynical ploy on the part of the tobacco industry. Because they figured out that they hadn't figured out a way yet to get it legalized so that they could actually take corporate control of cannabis. So what'd they do? The next best thing. They promoted a culture in which one
rolled one's weed up in tobacco. This is on the same par with that delightful idea that Budweiser had a few years ago, that they would make coffee beer. It would have the kick of a beer, but also the whacking caffeine load of a couple of cups of strong coffee. That was quickly eclipsed by the idea of having a couple of shots of vodka inside a Red Bull. So you get a lot of really buzzed up, wide awake drunks. Well, this is something similar. If you can't horn in and actually take over the cannabis industry, the next best thing for the tobacco industry to do was to promote itself as the vehicle of choice for smoking same. So if it is true, and I, of course, call into question whether it is, since David Brooks wrote it, if it's true that 1 in 6 teenagers becomes addicted to cannabis, and one wonders what that looks like, I mean, is that shaking hands? Is it the stuff that we associate with addictions in other forms, heroin, alcohol, that sort of thing? Nicotine? Ah, see? If it is indeed true that 1 in 6 teenagers becomes addicted to cannabis, has anybody examined what their smoking vehicle of choice is? Because if they're smoking blunts in those effing wrappers, the odds are it ain't cannabis they're addicted to, it's the effing nicotine in the wrappers, in the wrapping paper. I mean, this is not a tobacco leaf. This is that same dummied up, stepped on, mashed up. I mean, they make this goo out of floor scrapings of tobacco, and then they roll it out into a sheet, and they cut it off, and they sell it, you know, two or three to a package, I guess, so you no longer have to go to the trouble of taking a razor blade and splitting an actual cigar open to get that crummy wrapper off of a machine-rolled cigar. Could it be that that is, in fact, the addiction? Ah, well, who cares, right? I mean, David Brooks is no longer frolicking. I mean, now he's got a column at the New York Times, so he can drink that 240-year-old Scotch whiskey, which is respectable, don't you know? Nothing against Scotch or gin. I mentioned gin. Nothing against the responsible, consensual use of just about anything. It's just the pontificating from the extremely well-to-do that rubs the wrong way and spells out M-O-R-A-N. Steve, working the same side of the street as me, says, we should not legalize pot. It's too addictive. We should continue to have non-addictive drugs like alcohol remaining legal. Exactly. By the way, care to guess what the ratio is of the number of people who overdose and die on cannabis every year as compared to the people who overdose and die on, Oxycontin or any number of other pharmaceutical legal... Right. Yeah, it's whatever the pharmaceutical number is to zero. And a little actual information coming in from the free fire free smoke zone of Colorado. Kevin writing in from Colorado Springs. Since the 1st of January, the price of pot per ounce has doubled here, and most places are either sold out or nearing it. Yeah, I'm guessing there's going to be a good bit of tourism going on in Colorado and Washington. So anyway, back to the dumbass current. It's not dumb. It's just placed too close to the line of reality. Back to the thing from the current that so many people got suckered in by. Colorado is reconsidering its decision to legalize recreational pot following the deaths of dozens due to marijuana overdoses. According to a report in the Rocky Mountain News, 37 people were killed across the state on January 1st, the first day the drug became legal for all adults to purchase. Several more are clinging to life in local emergency rooms and are not expected to survive. It's complete chaos here, says Dr. Jack Shepard, chief of surgery at St. Luke's Medical Center in Denver. Really? Chief of surgery? I've put 5 college students in body bags since breakfast, and more are arriving every minute. We're seeing cardiac arrests, hypospadias, acquired triethylaminuria, and multiple organ failures. By next week, the death toll could go as high as 200, maybe 300. Someone needs to step in and stop this madness. My God, why did we legalize marijuana? What were we thinking? And you have to go down a couple more paragraphs before you're in on the gag. Colorado and Washington State approved the sale of marijuana for recreational use in November through statewide ballot measures. Under the new policies, pot is legal for adult use, regulated like alcohol, and heavily taxed. One of the principal arguments of legalization advocates was that cannabis has long been considered safer than alcohol and tobacco and was not thought to cause overdose. But a brave minority tried to warn Coloradans of the drug's dangers. This is where you find out it's a gag. We told everyone this would happen, says Peter Swindon, president and CEO of local brewer Molson Coors. Marijuana is a deadly hardcore drug that causes addiction and destroys lives. When was the last time you heard of someone overdosing on beer? All these pro-marijuana groups should be ashamed of themselves. The victim's blood is on their hands. See, that's where you find out it's a gag. Only a lot of people didn't catch on. Like I said, more hands. Uh-oh. Speaking of tourism, Marty points out, hey, the Broncos are at home this week for the playoffs. Yeah, who's going to Mile High and who's going to New England? I'll get an answer in a minute. Sparky pointing out in the chat room that Florida's marijuana ballot petition is nearing its signature goal and could be submitted this week, according to activists via a report from Reuters. Waggy with an interesting observation. Hopefully, the states that legalize cannabis will tax the crap out of it and fund health care for everyone in the state. There's a novel approach. Maybe add a penny tax to potato chips and peanuts and Reese's Cups and Big Gulps. Well, there you go. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Sparky. Chargers to Denver. And what a game that was, the Chargers and the Bungles. Oh, the Bungles. And the Colts, and that was a game ball. I was like, oh, this is over. And then the Chiefs completely fell apart. That was one of your better collapses. And, of course, the somewhat mythical national championship will be played for the last time tonight. The Auburn Tigers going up against Florida State. Oh, GK. Bob, don't forget to tax the Cheetos. Well, I was just including that generically in potato chips. More ends. More and Monday. Nothing quite like it. And we got lots more ends, too. Lots more. We will take a little break and come back. Oh, good news. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to Brian. We are now at $110 to go to meet this evening's Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. I think we can do this. A note coming in from Rob in Minnesota. 30 years ago, I was an experienced cannabis user. I wouldn't recommend this, but I smoked a joint on the way to take a road test for a driver's license. I scored a 99% on the test. It would have been 100%, but I was an inch over the big white line that I was supposed to stop behind, which was another 4 feet from the smaller white lines of the crosswalk. Very minor infraction. And that probably, Rob, has something to do with the fact that you were significantly into detail at the moment. Yeah. What do I mean when I say we got morons? Oh, let's see. We got, well, it wouldn't be Moran Monday if we didn't have a moron in Texas. But we've also got a moron in Wisconsin. We've got, well, let's see, we covered David Brooks, the moron in the Hamptons or where the hell ever. We got a moron in Wyoming. We got a dead moron. And it wouldn't be Moran Monday without Brian Fisher now, would it? See, we're going to be busy. So you too are invited to nominate your own Morans on this Moran Monday. If you want to jump in via the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype or on the phone lines 304-658-3333. We call what happens here Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Right out from under my life.
You know, I used to think that was a song that was about a relationship that was falling apart, but the more I listen to the lyrics there, it sounds like he's angry at her for going out and getting high with somebody else. Eyes have a mitt. Sanford Townsend Band from, oh, Jesus, what year? 19, I don't know. Sanford and Townsend Band, Smoke from a Distant Fire. Chat room liked the bumper choice. Thanks very much. And by the way, thanks very much to Karen and to Sal and to Jack, who have collectively taken us down to $65 to go to meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. It's coming right along. Thanks to everybody who is answering Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge this Moran Monday, the 6th day of January 2014. Breaking news from Steve. Midnight pizza, Wendy's Frosties, and dill pickle consumption have skyrocketed in Colorado. Steve gets, yeah, that's some classic. That's a classic case. Yeah. Incongruous things that wind up working out quite well together in the long run. Midnight pizza, because, you know, the midnight pizza, there's usually a couple of slices left the next morning, and yeah. Wendy's Frosties and dill pickle consumption.
Do you reckon David Brooks stopped for even a second to think, wait a minute, I'm criticizing Colorado for legalizing weed when this place has had a couple of really, really horrible, horrible, horrible massacres that might not have happened if the shooters had just been able to get stoned?
Nah.
And Steve also with a Moran nomination. I want to nominate the person on the New York Health Exchange when I found out my doctor doesn't take the insurance and the exchange that he did. He may participate in the exchange, but not actually take the insurance. Oh yeah, that's a top shelf restaurant quality level of Moranity right there. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jack, for your help in tonight's Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you indeed. I told you it would not. Oh, Dead Moran. Can't let this one go by. No, it's not. No, because we'd be. Well, I don't know. Are we that hateful? Would we be out in the streets if I was about to tell you that the Beckerhead or the Oxymoron had answered the margin call of talent on loan from God? I don't know. No, this is one of the earliest hate radio practitioners in the country. And proving that evil is in fact a preservative, he dropped dead this past week at the ripe old age of 84. Bob Grant died in Hillsboro, New Jersey, 84 years old. WABC Radio in New York announced his arguable descent into hell. He was a racist. He was a bigot, a homophobe. Just about everything that you have to be in order to be successful in right-wing radio, he was. Let's see. WABC fired him in 1996. When the plane carrying Ron Brown, Commerce Secretary to President Clinton, crashed. Following the news bulletin, Bob Grant said that he hoped Ron Brown had not survived the crash. In order to make his wish come true, 34 other people also had to die in that crash. He was well paid for this, by the way. That's the fun part. He'd been in L.A. before he went to New York in 1970, worked at WMCA. Then he left WMCA for WOR, and then joined WABC in 1984, where he lasted until 1996. during the 1970s, one of his favorite guests was none other than David Duke, the Klansman from Louisiana. Of course, it was David Duke who would go on to sell his direct mail list to the Family Research Council for their early outreach to the sickening right wing. See how the connections form? He also, according to the New York Times, interviewed Bernie Goetz. Remember Bernie Goetz? He shot and wounded four black kids on a subway train. Goetz claimed that they were getting ready to rob him. On air with him, Bob Grant said that it was just a shame he hadn't, and this is a quote, finished the job by killing them all. It was 1987 when Ronnie Reagan killed the Fairness Doctrine. And Bob Grant was one of the early exploiters of that. And he sucked up to New York Governor George Pataki and Rudy Giuliani. He called Governor Mario Cuomo Il Duce. He referred to Senator Frank Lautenberg as Senator Lausenberg. Oh, he was a creative one. And here's a lovely chestnut.
You can talk all you want about minorities' rights, but heaven forbid you talk about white rights. I see a very bleak future for this country simply because the quality of the citizenry seems to be heading down.
Oh, Jesus. That's 1989 with the white rights BS. These things never really, you know, these racist, bigoted Klan-type white supremacy Aryan nations skinhead memes never really completely go away, do they? They just get recycled, and they get said with different pitch, different timber. Then there's May 1993. That's when Bob Grant called Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and this is a quote, that slime ball. He continued the diatribe by referring to Dr. King as this bum, this womanizer, this liar, this fake, this phony. And they kept on giving him a paycheck to say it. Hoo-wee! There could be, you see, there could be no Rush Limbaugh, no Beckerhead, no Hannity job without Bob Grant. Bob Grant showed he plumbed the depths of right-wing hatred. He invented talking for shock value. At one point in time, he said that New York Mayor David Dinkins reminded him of the men's room attendant at his favorite restroom. He said that people who had children while receiving welfare benefits should be forced into the Bob Grant mandatory sterilization program. Wow.
the exact quote about Ron Brown? My hunch is that he is the one survivor. I just have that hunch. Maybe it's because at heart, I'm a pessimist. After WABC dumped him, he got picked up by WOR and stayed there until 2006. He finally retired in 2012 at the age of 82. No, I told you there couldn't be a Limbaugh without a Bob Grant. They gave him a dinner one night, and the oxymoron showed up and said, Bob, you are a man who has paved the way for others to come along and do it. I am grateful to you. All right, give me another pill. Chew it up for the refreshing burst of flavor. I come not to praise Bob Grant, but to bury him. Hopefully in a toxic waste container 300 miles out to sea. You get the idea. Let's see here. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good. I've got a somewhat different Moron Monday nominee this week. The members of the Colorado Springs City Council who voted 5-4 in the swing vote was a guy named Val Snyder, who voted to ban pot sales in the city because he wanted to see how it all played out. While Denver and Pueblo are gathering immense amounts of sales tax revenue from pot sales, Colorado Springs is missing out on it. And it's just unbelievable because they're raising our rates on our utilities. They wouldn't have to do this had they voted to accept pot sales in the city, and we're watching the county that we live in get all that money from sales tax revenue. And we're not collecting a cent of it. And it's just incredibly short-sighted. Even if you're against pot, you know, most politicians are more than happy to accept tax. They'll tax cigarettes and alcohol.
Oh, they love regressive sin taxes more than anything else in the world.
Yeah. So when they voted to not accept these sales tax, even the conservatives in the city are like, what? You know?
And yeah, but, I mean, okay, so I don't know this for sure, but were those five votes, you reckon they got phone calls from the folks up at Dobsonville?
Oh, I would imagine, yeah. Now, the guy that was swing vote on there, I don't think he did. I think he's just an idiot. I met him during the run-up to the last election for council, and he didn't impress me as someone who really took a hard stance on issues, kind of wishy-washy, and that was his reasoning. I want to see how things go first. Maybe we'll have 34 overdose deaths in Colorado, and, you know, that might change my mind to vote against it completely. But I'm open to voting for it in the future if things work out, you know. And it's just like, and you got to understand the Colorado Springs dynamics. I can take a 10-15 minute drive east, west, north, or south and be out of the city. So it's not anything that's going to be a real hardship on anybody that's got transportation to go outside the city limits to get their pot and drive back home. But in their brilliance, these five people decided, no, we don't want to accept that sales tax revenue, and oh, by the way, we're raising your utility rates as of January 1st. So, you know, I thought I would nominate them because it's just
Well, so is that? I mean, it's legal statewide, but I don't understand the complete operation of the law yet, Kevin. So it can be bought outside of municipalities. I mean, you can. So I mean, so you know effectively what these goobs have done.
Mm-hmm.
They've set up a situation where there will be a ring of pot stores just outside the city limits.
Right.
And the county will get the revenues instead of the city. Nice.
Exactly. And realistically, because Colorado Springs is the biggest city in the county, we do a lot of things for the county, bus transportation, that kind of thing. Guess who's not getting those revenues? You know, I mean, it's just unfathomable to me that any politician could be that short-sighted, because it's legal everywhere. To answer your question, you can go inside a city, outside a city. There are some cities that have banned it within their city limits for reasons other than tax revenue, of course. But
I mean, how much outcry has there been of, you know, Jesus, please save us from reefer madness? I mean, Colorado Springs is pretty much chock-a-block with right-wing fundamentalists in and out of the Air Force Academy.
Yeah, but I can answer that very easily. There's been none. I haven't heard any. I have heard absolutely none. There may be the lone right-winger here or there, but I have heard none. I personally heard nothing from Focus or anybody. You know, of course, the military is still going to tell their soldiers they can't do pot, but realistically, I haven't heard any opposition by anybody to it.
Wow.
You know, maybe I missed it, but I really haven't heard any opposition to it except for these city council members who, I guess, were holier than thou.
Yeah, Waggy just noted in the chat room, he said the right-wing fundies were lined up around the block to buy some, Bob, just like Baptists at a liquor store sale.
Oh, yeah, that's probably more than true. And so, you know, I don't know what else to say than that. It goes without saying that something that, and as I said in my email to you, it's doubled since the first, the price of an ounce. Most people are buying an eighth of an ounce, half of an ounce, you know, that kind of thing. But the price of an ounce has doubled since the first.
Well, one of the things that's going to happen in a state with legalization is that the scale of purchase is probably going to go lower rather than higher. I mean, just like your average consumer, I don't know, maybe I'm completely wrong here, but your average consumer of alcohol doesn't go in and buy a 1.75 of something. Your average consumer goes in and buys a fifth or a pint.
Right.
So to that extent, if the store's open all the time and if it's legal all the time, you don't need to go in and buy an ounce or a half an ounce. You can go in and buy a couple of grams. Go in and buy an eighth or something like that. But when you say the prices are going way, I mean, have you heard anything about, I mean, what are they like?
$45
for an eighth or what?
I thought it said 45 an ounce, but I think that's more like 95 an ounce and 45 for an eighth. And yeah, it will go down once the initial celebrations are over with, I guess. But you know, it hurts. The one group of people it hurts are the medical marijuana users, because the prices of, you know, if you run a dual medical marijuana legal sale shop, where are you going to put all that resource to? Where you're making the money at?
Hey, welcome to the free market.
Exactly. So the medical marijuana people are going to find an adverse effect to this until the initial hoopla dies down, and a year from now, it'd probably be down to about $20 an ounce. You know, I mean.
Oh, I doubt it'll ever drop that far. Kathy pointing out that medical is about $250 an ounce.
Yep. And, I know I saw an article, they busted some guy down in southwest Colorado this weekend for having 150 plants. Apparently he wasn't licensed to grow them.
You know, there will always be a black market because, among other things, you can't just... it's 21. It's 21 to purchase, just like booze, right?
I'm not sure of the age of whether it's 18 or 21. I would here you can buy 3.5 at 18. So
near beer.
So I don't know if I haven't followed it that close to know what the I'm way over.
So maybe in Colorado you can buy some shredded up sisal hemp rope at 18. The weed equivalent of 3.5.
And that's the other thing we're doing, Bob. We're actually, the state is actually outlining some rules for hemp production. So, you know, that's positive also.
Well, it's a magnificent plant. It'll grow it'll just about grow on concrete. And it has uses that cannot fully be calculated.
Well, that's what you were saying, kind of joking about in the first segment. The benefit to other businesses, hemp production. You may have joked about the Wendy's and pizzas and that, but yeah, you're going to see an increase in that kind of stuff because that's what people do. And, you know.
Job creators.
Well, yeah. You know, one of the articles I read this week talked about what they had to do to get licensed and all that. And, yeah, you know, these stores that are currently selling out of their product are going to have to be hiring new people put up with the demand, meet the demand of the buyers. You know, if you're tripling, I'd say, what you expected in demand for this first month, you've got to bring on more associates to help you sell that product. And so, yeah, job creation, everything. Hemp production, if that actually becomes something that comes to pass, there'll be a market for that. And
you know what? You don't now. Maybe I'm way off base with this, but you know, you fly over places like Colorado, and you see those circles from the air. You see those circles of, you know, the irrigation circles, the crops, and everything.
Right.
I'm guessing for somebody who wants to raise hemp, you know, industrial hemp.
Right.
If there becomes a market for it, that'll be a lot less intensive than some other crops. And in light of the fact that water is becoming scarcer and scarcer out that way, that might be a good thing.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they'll make Soylent Green out of hemp. You know, and people.
Well, I think we've already got those. It's called the Republican Tea Party. Well, I just wanted to call you and let you know that. Also got a chance to speak to Bill a while ago. He's doing fine. A little bit aggravated at the nursing home staff, but that just means he's getting better, to be, you know, kind of grouchy about that. So if Thomas is out there listening, I'm wondering if you've heard anything from when he's going to get out, because if he's not going to get out anytime soon, I'd like to get him some kind of access to the show. And I don't know if that's something that the Horn family can work on.
Well, I know Thomas is working on his computers, or computer.
Yeah.
And trying to do some technology update. I'm not sure what the actual move-in date is yet, but obviously he's being pretty mobile, and that's an awesome thing. And I don't know, for all I know, he may be one of these blinking lights here, so and maybe we'll get the question answered.
Well, I think that's one of the problems, and that's why I mentioned the access to the show, is because he can't call out when he'd like to, and when I was on the phone with him, they basically told him he had to get off. So, and that was right before showtime. So, you know,
yeah,
like the show, you know, that kind of thing. And,
yeah.
So if he is going to be in there for a long period of time, that might be a little project we could work on trying to get him. Because I know it would be a real hassle to move the computers in there where he's at. But if we could even get him some sort of cell phone, one of those prepaid phones that has a few minutes on, you know, where he could call into the show or listen to the show, that kind of thing. Just something that would get him some access. So, I just want to mention it, not necessarily to Thomas, but to the whole Horn family. From what Bill said, he's thinking he may get out in 3 or 4 days.
So, oh, that'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah. And if that move takes place to where he's hoping to get moved to, which I think is in the process of happening, that'll be awesome, too, because that's right where he needs to be amongst people he grew up with in the industry. And, you know, you can talk shop all day long if you want to, you know, that kind of thing. So I know he enjoyed going out on New Year's Eve with Colin and doing that. So, but I just wanted to mention it because I know when I was on the phone with him, it was right at showtime, and he was a little bit frustrated that he had to get off the phone and, you know, that he didn't have any access to the show. So I just want to tell everybody that he did say hello and he does miss the show. So, you know, more than anything else. But it's been something, I guess, that I don't – it's been on my mind. If he's going to be stuck there for any length of time, we need to get him access to the show. And the side benefit – to that would be that if we get him access to the show, we might get others access to the show as well.
Right, and sometime in the near future, it's just a matter of going through providers and things like that and sorting out some details. One of the things I really am committed to doing is bringing back the toll-free number. We've got a couple of other plans in the works, but I don't know when they're going to materialize. So, you know, the short and sweet is that we need to get that thing cooking again.
Yeah, that's one thing that it's kind of on that same line, is I've only got one provider here for my computer service, and I want to be rid of Comcast as a provider, because I don't watch that much television anymore, and I could do with just a phone and internet, and I probably could do without the phone, just go to the cell phone. But finding that provider seems very hard for some reason. And I know with a toll-free number for you, it's kind of the same thing. You've probably got to be locked into a contract with them, don't you?
It depends on who you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And some of that's the essential one of the essential issues here is who are we going to deal with? Because
right.
It's toll free for the caller, but it costs, you know, there's a per minute cost, just like old school long distance.
Right.
And one of the things that I had wondered is with the proliferation of cell phones and everything, that kind of takes long distance out of the equation. But there are still people who need that toll free access. Oddly enough, Bill was not one of them, because, you know, your cable telephone service and things like that is nationwide long distance now, almost all of them.
Yep. And that's one thing I'll say for Comcast. They've at least kept up with that to where they're almost everything is top-notch as far as the phone service and internet speed and that kind of thing. But I'd like to have a little competition here to know what's out there. And kind of hard to do when my accessible software really only works with one system. And so I'm kind of locked into Comcast, and it's kind of, you know, it must be the same amount of frustration you have with the toll-free number, because I know with your other, when you lost the toll-free number, it was because of a dispute, and there was no getting around that.
Yeah, that and that's the thing. We're just going to have to go and start all over again with a different provider.
Yeah, but it seemed extremely unfair by that old provider.
Well, it was a pain in the it was a straight up pain in the ass. It's probably a little bit too much inside baseball, but the bottom line was is that they promised to deliver a product and they didn't deliver it. You know, if I'm supposedly getting a T1. And I can't send out a 64 kbps stream, I ain't getting a T1.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just one stream at 64 kbps, so.
Yeah. Yep. And that's what I was kind of wondering is when you do those contracts, you kind of got to get the whole everything, don't you?
I mean, you get what you get, but
right.
Yeah, you do sign a contract.
Yeah.
And in this, you know, in this case, it's a whole lot of telephone lines and internet and yada yada yada.
Yep.
All right. Well, Kevin, you have yourself a very good evening, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
You too, Bob.
And if you hear anything from Bill or he needs anything from us, holler.
Oh, definitely. Big shout out to Thomas for all he's done, and to Colin DeSalt also, and to you, because I know there's been a good response from the Horn family, and that's one thing, Bob. You know, the nursing home is like, who are all these people calling for this guy? You know, and so they.
Well, did they not know they had, did they not know they got a rock star on their in their unit?
I really don't think they did initially. I don't think they had any clue when they first came in there, because they, you know. I just don't think they did, and that's all I'll say about it. It seems to me like they weren't prepared, and that's the hardest thing there is what you have to call him on is a phone line that he can't just stand there and talk to you on it. It's not even a family room phone line. It's the line into the nursing home.
No, oh, for heaven's sakes.
So, you know.
Great facility.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So,
and I'll bet, and you know what? I'll bet they bill Medicare for a phone in every room.
Well, I'm like, Bill, this is 2013. They don't have phone lines in every room. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
Years ago, maybe, but not 2013.
Sarah, connect me to the Bluebird Diner. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Hey, Kevin, have a good night. My friend, be well. All right, bye now.
Take care.
Bye. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs, and we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bud, how you doing?
What's happening?
Oh, I'm sorry about the other night.
That's all right. Don't worry about it.
I appreciate that. You know, as far as what Kevin was talking about, these places like that treat basically a lot of their patients. It's just nameless numbers on lists that they carelessly mislay.
Well, it's human being warehousing, Jim.
Exactly what it is. I mean, you know, they're one step above Hartheim and those places in Nazi Germany. Some of them are. They really are.
I think of it, you've seen The Matrix, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know those pods that all the people are in with the little tubes and everything?
Right.
Well, that's warehousing of human beings. And the warehouse, regardless of how it happens, the warehousing of human beings is good money. I mean, if you want to warehouse older people or infirm nursing homes, good money. Or maybe you want to warehouse people who have, committed marijuana crimes. Well, the for-profit prison industry is good money. I mean, for God's sakes, I read an article the other day. Sweden, since we were talking about Sweden earlier, Sweden is shutting down prisons because they don't have enough people to put in them. So I got to thinking about the truly free market capitalist approach to that is that, you know, pretty soon we'll start renting, the United States will start renting out Swedish prisons.
My God, I think we have enough people we want to incarcerate so that they'll probably, you know, find a place for them. You know?
Well, I mean, there are more important. We incarcerate a larger percentage of our population than any other so-called developed country in the world.
Yeah, back in 81, we were fifth. Now we're first as far as being locked up is concerned. And that's just stupid. I mean, you've got these kids who are being put into prison for minor drug offenses like marijuana or whatever. And what happens when you put them in that type of environment? They come out as a hardened criminal.
Right. It's criminal university.
And pissed off at society for being so unkind to them and unfair.
Well, I mean, I wonder, this is just the kind of stuff that I think about, Jim. You remember Anders Breivik, who shot all those children in Norway a couple of years ago?
You know I don't. I'm sorry.
Well, he went on a shooting, right winger, went on a shooting rampage, killed a bunch of children at a summer camp, and it was just horrifying. And, of course, he took all of his cues from the American right wing. Well, he's been put, you know, he'll do maybe, I think, like 20 years or something in a Norwegian prison. And, you know, anytime the bars clang shut behind you, it's not fun. But I imagine there's a big damn difference between how Norway treats its prisoners and how we do. I mean, I go back to the Abu Ghraib fiasco, war crime, if you will. You know, everybody, oh, my God, we couldn't possibly do this. And remember Rush Limbaugh saying, you know, my friends, it's just a fraternity prank. You know, I'd love to know the fraternity he was in. But the fact of the matter is, we brutalize our prisoners in this country every day, Jim. And the country that brutalizes its own domestic prisoners the way it does, Abu Ghraib was no surprise to me.
Well, no. Well, you can go back to Attica in 1970 and the revolt they had there, which was basically not spawned at Attica, but somewhere else in California. And that's when the prisoners came into the mess hall and refused to say anything or do anything. It was like a 500-unit mess hall. And then this thing erupted into a huge fiasco. And Rockefeller had to call in the National Guard, and it was just, it was absolutely horrible. The American penal system, and I have often talked on this program about how unfair it is, even talking about how they use prisoners for drug experiments and things like that in the book by Jessica Mitford, Cheaper Than Chimpanzees, and how they absolutely use select portions of the prison population in exchange for more candy, more cigarettes, or whatever you can get, in exchange for pharmaceutical companies to test medications on them that have terrible contraindications. Terrible. Of course, they hush that book up real quick.
And, you know, supposedly, but supposedly now we don't do that sort of thing. We just brutalize people to the point of acquiescence because we want to keep them alive and in there and in those cots for as long as possible, because there are some shareholders out there who have to be paid every quarter, you know, a quarter of a penny on a share.
Well, they're just basically a unit in which generates capital for the shareholders. That's exactly what they are. They're not people. They're just units of monetary increment.
Yeah, they are capital delivery vehicles.
Whatever, they can be called numbers of things, but you know, it's amazing how, as Martha would say to George in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, what a devil with language these people can be. Whether it is the resettlement, final solution, or the money delivery vehicle, it's just, it's incredible how people can do this, isn't it?
I happened to be in a bookstore with Ferg. And I pointed out, we were talking about books that maybe he might want to start thinking about reading in advance of maybe some sort of a college experience. And we just happened to be standing in front of Hannah Arendt's book. And I pointed to it and I said, you know, you might want to read that. and just gave him a quick overview of the phrase, the banality of evil.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I think that, and that goes hand in hand with that quote that I use at the bottom of all of my emails from Kurt Vonnegut, that a normal person functioning well in the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. You know, the last thing corporate America wants is conscience.
Oh, they do not wish for people to think. They don't want people to even question or whatever. And, you know, speaking of corporate America, it was referenced earlier, I think, on the show about utility costs.
Yeah.
My God, they've gone sky through the roof.
Yes, they have. And I mean, you're talking about yours, right?
Yeah.
And your heat is electric, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, please bear in mind that is what the West Virginia Coal Association would tell you is affordable, cheap coal electricity.
Well, that's just bullshit.
Yes, it is.
People have gone up incredibly. I mean, I was like on a budget plan, and then I wound up with like an $800 resettlement bill in December, and I said, what the fuck is going on here? And
they know, you know, they know that the average customer doesn't have the skill set to haul their sorry asses in front of the Public Service Commission.
No, they don't. As a matter of fact, you've got, as far as the PSC is concerned, you've got so many foxes in the hen house that just give them, you know, access to any increase they want.
And, you know, and how many people... See, stuff sticks in my mind, Jim, for years. I remember, what, 3-4 years ago when Appalachian Power was down in front of the Public Service Commission saying, please, but we have to increase our rates because back when coal was really expensive, we bought tons and tons of it at the highest imaginable price, thinking that we would be able to sell it off to people out of state, you know, on the grid. And then we had a warm winter. In other words, we made terrible, terrible decisions, and now we need the ratepayers to cover our ass. And you know what the PSC did?
I gave it to them.
Right. You see it. That's what you're seeing in your bill right now. I mean, your bill, Jim, does not reflect the cost of coal going into these power plants right now.
Oh,
it reflects terrible decisions made 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Oh, I know. And, you know, when you try to talk to these people and ask them to come out and check your meter, some guy comes out and has some type of radio gun, doesn't even go up to the meter physically to see if it's malfunctioning. And then you get a call from some guy who's local and says, your meter's fine. And I ask him, I said, did you come out and check it? Were you there physically to observe the rotation of the disc inside the glass? No. And I said, then what is in this letter you sent me, and why are you calling me? I said, this is bullshit. He said, well, I don't know what else to tell you. And I said, I'm sure you don't. But it's just incredible.
No, because the only thing he could say would be, you know, pay up, citizen. That's your job. And the point was made in the chat room a couple of minutes ago, Jim, that what we're talking about is the difference between what happens when an economy serves people and when it's all turned upside down on its head and people are made to serve the economy.
Yeah, when people serve are made to serve the economy. You're right, exactly. I mean, all these things, all these corporations have the cart before the horse. And it's just incredible. And you talk about transfer of wealth. I mean, this is just one of the few vehicles that are used to transfer wealth from the energy consumer to the people who hold the strings in these electric and power companies and their shareholders. Because the people who hold all the money in their shareholders' situation, they really don't care about what their electric bill is. But the people who are being hurt are the ones they're being left in the dark, and literally that's what they will do. I mean, with Jesuitical efficiency, if you don't meet their standards or whatever, they will cut you off, and that's it. They don't give a damn about anybody who's hurt.
Sure, and then after you've been cut off, the real trip to the funhouse begins, because you have to come up with some unholy level, unholy amount for a deposit before there's a reconnect, and then you still got a deal, but that's on top of paying the due and owing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, Will in Chicago in the chat room, Jim, looked up Norwegian prisons based upon what we were talking about, and shot me an article from The Guardian in the UK from February of last year about a prison on a Norwegian island off the coast in the Oslo Fjord called Bastøy. And it is it's an island facility, and it is criticized as being luxurious because people are treated like human beings. There's a photo that accompanies the story of a prisoner sitting in trunks with a baseball cap over his head, sunning himself in what I presume is the Norwegian summer, sunbathing. And what's interesting is that this prison that's called cushy and luxurious has the lowest reoffending rate in Europe.
That speaks for recidivism, doesn't it?
Yeah, and one of the prisoners interviewed said, here, you know, we know we're prisoners, but they treat us like people.
Well, I mean, that's what you need to do. You don't need to have Dachau and these other places reinvented.
Angola.
That's exactly
San Quentin.
What they are. I mean, God, there's so many. And the science of penology has just gone from rehabilitation to incarceration in a 6x9. And, you know, graduate school for people, when they are emerged, they come out unable to cope with society, and they become institutionalized.
Well, there's a comparison to be made. We do, you know, we run prisons this way, and we run it, you know, we run it like we run the rest of the country, on the cheap, and for maximum profit.
You know, remember that scene in The Shawshank Redemption when Morgan Freeman came up for his parole hearing?
Mm-hmm.
And what he told them at the parole board. He basically just told them to go fuck themselves. He said, rehabilitation? He said, that's just something that's been invented to give you guys in suits a job. He said, the only thing I can offer in my 40 years is the fact that I was a dumb kid. And if I could talk to that dumb kid when I did what I did, perhaps this would not have happened to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a very moving.
I love the movie. I love that film. You know, consider, okay, so we got this prison in Norway. Consider that Finland has one of the best education systems in the world, and that's the place where teachers are paid on a level similar to that of physicians. Now, we know it works, but would we try it here? Hell no, because the right wing would foster, you know, money envy.
Oh, those union school teachers.
I know. I mean, look at what the AMA. I wonder how the AMA is reacting to the Affordable Care Act.
They've been reasonably supportive, but of course they don't have that much of a dog in the hunt, Jim, because the Affordable Care Act has not a damn thing to do with health care. It has to do with insurance. You know, doctors are going to doctor.
Yep, and they're going to be paid. And they're going to be paid.
You know, all those years that the medical industry spent inveighing against those evil heathen trial lawyers who were destroying their world. That was one of the most beautiful pieces of bait and switch prestidigitation ever accomplished, because the people who were screwing the medical industry were never the trial lawyers. Something less than 10% of people who are malpracticed upon in this country ever even consult a lawyer. The number's much smaller for those who sue. Okay, but even beyond, no, what was screwing the doctors were the insurance companies. Lawyers weren't looking over doctors' shoulders determining what was the right course of action, but some pettifogging, penny-pinching insurance executive was. And yet, these are the very people that we are subsidizing.
Yeah, and of course, you know, imagine how much they try to screw Medicare.
I mean, I'd a damn sight rather use taxpayer monies to just make doctors as rich as they want to be, as long as they treated everybody in the country.
But unfortunately, that's not going to happen with a lot of doctors in this country.
Right.
They really are. I mean, where are we ranked in health care?
Oh, Jesus, what, 27th?
Used to be 18th about 5 years ago. Now it's 27th.
Maybe. I mean, I'm guessing at this point. But look, we've got a higher infant mortality rate than Cuba.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We do.
We've got a higher postpartum maternal mortality rate than Cuba. And this isn't me beating on Cuba. I have tremendous respect for a lot that has happened there.
Well, I do too.
They're more literate than we are. You want to see something fascinating sometime? There are licensed baseball commentators. I mean, that's a baseball crazy nation, Jim. There are licensed baseball commentators who will gather in downtown Havana and sit there and scream, stand there and scream at each other at the top of their lungs over slugging percentages, ERAs, who's got the inside track to the championship, and 99% of it is better than anything you can get from any TV baseball commentator in the United States. At least since Red Barber and Ernie Harwell and folks like that went away.
Well,
oh, I'm sorry, healthcare, 37th. 37th, according to Sparky.
37th. It used to be 18th back in 96.
Yeah, I think we're roughly on the same level as like Iran. But Iran's trying to get better. We're not.
You're right there. Absolutely. I don't know what's going to happen over in Iraq. I mean, you saw what happened in Fallujah.
About
Charlie Foxtrot. That was really one of them. But that's something for another night.
Well, yeah, I haven't completely digested the Fallujah thing.
Well,
but,
I mean, you know, it's basically Al Qaeda is taking control of the city and
or a group that claims affiliation
whatever.
That. Yeah.
But then, you know, nonetheless, well, we have really begun to see, you know, what a hornet's nest we invaded.
Well, we did. Everything happened that dim leader's daddy said would happen. He didn't want to take Saddam out because it would destabilize the region, create a power vacuum, make a big damn mess, and because George W. Bush had daddy issues and some really sick, weird, twisted Oedipal crap going on and was potty trained at gunpoint and everything else. You know, yeah, I'm going to outdo my daddy. I'm going to do what he couldn't do. I'm going to take F Saddam. We're taking him out.
Well, you know.
And the devil take the hindmost, you know?
Bush 1 had sense about that thing, and that's the reason he stopped and allowed that regime to stand. But his son, for whatever reason, as you stated earlier, really has put a real mess on the whole situation. And now, instead of having an ally or someone upon which, you know, whom we could rely, we've got an enemy. And an enemy that will never forget in a very strategic place.
Yeah, long memories.
Awful lot.
Well, I mean, those are the ancestors of people who chased off the Romans.
You got it.
Riding on the backs of horses, shooting arrows over their shoulders.
So the Parthian shot.
Bingo. Hey, Jim, good conversation. I hope you stay warm. It's It's hateful out there right now.
Let me check. I'll check before I go on my patio. It is now. Let's see here. If I can look at this thing.
Yeah, it's now the thermometer's knocking on the door asking to come in.
Well, mine says 34 degrees. I don't believe that.
Yeah, it quit.
I think it did. I think it gave up the ghost.
You left it out there and said, screw it.
I've got this thing that it transmits from a little transmitter or whatever to get inside and outside temperature. But it was like 9 degrees the last time I checked it.
Well, it's 3 here.
Oh, Jesus.
It's 3 outside, Jim, and I'm not looking up, and it's here inside the fabulous studio. It is 62. We have lost a degree of we've lost a degree of warmth in here, you know, over the last 2 hours.
Kind of like the sanity of the American public. We're just losing it by degrees, aren't we?
Well, there you go, Jim. Have a good evening. Stay warm.
Thank you. You too.
Bye now. See, people can disagree, and then let it get passed. By the way, before I go back to the phone lines, Will just shot this clip to me after talking about, you know, we're number 37, we're 37, we're 37. This is from the newsroom, and it's a tremendous clip.
Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying
yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it anytime he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium.
God, he sounds like a horn listener.
Freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yet you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore.
Pretty concise. Maybe, you know, maybe a little bit maudlin, but a lot of truth in it. A lot of truth. Okay. I'm told that somewhere in the midst of these blinking lights, and it's just going to be the luck of the draw if I find it, the Jug of Punch tells me that Bill is on the line, so I hope one of them is him. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? 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 Okay, well, hope that wasn't Bill.
Bob.
Yes, hello.
Hi, it's Larry Buckhalter. How are you?
Oh, hey, Larry. How are you?
I'm sorry, I'm not...
Oh, don't apologize. No, I just... I got blinking lights. They don't come with names.
Yeah, well, I've got to be really brief because my... I'm going to start my routine getting up and stuff and having some food. Mercedes is here.
Huh.
Anyway, I wanted to let you know that I listened to Bill this afternoon, and what Bill was talking about the stock market and about retirement plays right into what you and Jim were talking about the degradation of people for profit purposes, and the fact that we just don't really want to take care of people and make sure that they have a decent retirement.
Well, you know, Larry, let me just jump in real quick on this, because one of the things that I was thinking about when Dr. Bill was talking was that unspoken in all of this, I mean, the assumption is made that you've got to go and play on Wall Street in order to retire with any dignity. And for a country that considers itself to be civilized, to adhere to something like that is absolutely putrid. The fact of the matter is, I think the jumping off point, the real questions that need to be asked is, why have we allowed Social Security to be so thoroughly A, denigrated, and B, weakened over the course of the last few decades, so that why shouldn't, I mean, okay, if you want to live the life of Riley, great, do that. Sock away a bunch of money, play in the stock market, get your ass handed to you, lose it all, maybe you double it or triple it, who freaking knows. But Social Security should be sufficient to provide a dignified retirement to any human being in this country. Do you find any fault with that?
I don't find any fault with that. Especially when you stop and think that the reason why the stock market was developed in the first place was to be able to provide people with the way to be able to keep companies, to be able to provide funds for companies, to be able to keep them solvent, and so that people would have, you know, a safe way of knowing that if they invested in a particular company, that company, so it was basically used so that, and it was supposed to be used responsibly, but it hasn't been over the last 30 years or so. And you were talking about prisons and about the corporate prison situation. People with disabilities have been fighting against the nursing home establishment, at least the people that I know, in terms of money follows the person, the Mikasa bill, and also the Olmstead Act for years. We've been trying to get people out of nursing homes and try to get them to be independent. We've also been trying to provide or trying to support attendant care services so that people could live in the community and live independently to their fullest possible potential. We were also hoping that our caregivers would get a reasonable or a decent salary, because this is hard work, believe me, it is, and it's a people job. You know, it's not just, you know, somebody comes in here and has to deal with not only conditions but also with people. But in the recent years, the state of California, where I live, seems to be wanting to save money, and they want to streamline the program, and they want to treat my caregiver and other caregivers just like they're, you know, factory workers punching a clock. And we seem to be going further and further away from the not only the reality, but the idea of having people living independently. And it seems like ever since the mid-70s, the criminal justice system has gone away from notions in radical criminology, which were based upon trying to provide services so that prisoners could reintegrate into society, and so they could have jobs, and they could reintegrate into their community without a whole lot of stigma. And they've gotten rid of radical criminology programs, and all they care about is punishing and throwing away the key. And now that the government is not involved with at least having some minimal oversight over how people are treated, it seems like, you know, anything goes. And I've never been in a prison, but I have lived in crippled children's homes, as you know, as a teenager. And I do know that eventually, one of these years, I'm going to have to face needing a whole lot of care. And I can tell you that I don't want to see myself in a nursing home, and to hear that Mr. Stress may be living in a nursing home himself, you know, in that situation, and may not be able to have the independence that he had before, is just, it's really frightening. It's really frightening, Pop.
To the extent that any American probably has to face that reality to one degree or another, to know the sort of orders of magnitude more that attend your own situation, Larry, I think I would just be rendered mute if I had to think about what you have to think about. And I mean, it's terrifying.
Well, in a nursing home, you lose all your rights. You lose your privacy. You don't even know where your clothes are a lot of times, because a lot of people who are in nursing homes don't have the cognitive ability to be able to make their own decisions. So they're very easily taken advantage of, and to think that if all their friends have died and they don't have any loved ones around them to be able to watch and see what's going on, or that their loved ones don't care about them, just leave them in a nursing home, that's just not acceptable.
If you want to explore how we got there, Larry, you have to go back to the imposition of permanent, it's like permanent war-footing consumer culture that takes over after the Second World War, in which the idea of the extended family was destroyed, so that mom and dad raise a couple of kids, the kid takes over, and mom and dad become grandma eventually, and everybody stays in the same place. And that was a phenomenon that worked pretty well throughout most of the existence of what passes for human history, you know, all the way back to rock shelter and cave dwellers.
Well,
but you know, after 1945, a decision was made that was no longer any good. We had to chase everybody off their land. They had to be centralized in urban environments. And they had to go to work in the factories that had to constantly be built and added onto and expanded. And the next thing you know, you get nursing homes and private prisons.
Yeah. How does Freud figure into this? Because Freud always tried to teach people that hell was their, you know, that the child's hell was their, his or her own parents. So we've created this situation.
Oh, that's not to say that it was perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I've said it before, and I will probably say it many, many more times. I cannot recommend Joe Bajant's Rainbow Pie highly enough. It was his last book, and it is just an absolutely stirring, some places heartbreaking, but just it has the air of truth about it as he describes these phenomena. And it's well worth the time it would take to read it.
Well, I wish that I had the ability myself to turn these things around. I know that you've always said, whenever we complain about the government, we're really you get tired of people complaining about the government, because the government really is the people. What the people have to do is they have to decide what kind of government that they want, and how they want to be represented. And right now it seems like if the people are the government, they're making some pretty darned crazy and misguided decisions, although those very people, if I were to suggest that, would be saying that I was crazy and that they were sane. So you
identify the nature of the problem. Well, Larry, I don't want to keep Mercedes waiting. She does a real good job by you, and
appreciate you for doing that. Yeah,
and but I really appreciate you calling in, and I appreciate the conversation.
Okay, and I'll be calling into Dr. Bill a couple days, and I'll be listening. Thank you.
Well, he'll be excited to hear from you. You take care, Larry.
Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Bye now. From the Bay Area, that's Larry, and let's see. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Okay. Try again in a little bit. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Edward.
Yes, I will be very short. I just wanted to wish all of you a very happy 12th night.
Indeed, for this is in fact that.
It's the 12th day of Christmas.
And according to Mr. Shakespeare, strange things happen.
Well, I was going to say, watch out, because tonight things are not as they seem.
Well, I tell you what, if any half naked little forest dweller can make it in the temperatures I'm dealing with, you know what? He can do whatever he wants to.
Well, I had,
because he's made of sterner stuff than I am.
Well, I tell you, I had my friends Sally and Molly, their sisters. In the summer, they live in Alaska, and in the winter, they live in Dallas. And their friends in Alaska called them today and said, it's warmer in Alaska than it is in Dallas. We're only 30 degrees.
Well, yeah, I think we're, what, 6 degrees warmer, what a word, than Barrow, Alaska, according to the chat room earlier at the beginning of the program.
Oh yeah, well they live in Anchorage, so.
Well, that's probably balmy there.
Oh yes, I mean palm trees and everything. Well, you all take care and be careful tonight because things are not as they seem. And there's a wonderful author. His name is H.H. Monroe, and his pen name is Saki, and that comes from Omar Khayyam. I think the last line in that.
Of the Rubaiyat, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. he was a writer, and he joined the service in England in 1912. They offered him a commission, and he refused and went in as a private, and he was killed in 1960. But this one very wonderful story is titled Tobermory. Tobermory was a cat.
Oh.
And this grand lady on this big estate had a grand party, and all these people came and were spending the whole weekend and everything. And all of a sudden, Tobermory gained the power of speech and just went around telling all the stories on everybody at the party. Needless to say, it didn't go over very well. I love H.H. Monroe.
Well, I have to look that up.
Yeah, you'd like it. They're short stories. Oh, and there's another one. Don't get me started. Take care and have a wonderful year.
I'm going to try, and I want you to, too, as well, Edward. I look forward to hearing from you soon.
I guess through with a dentist this week.
Oh, mercy.
Oh, God.
I sympathize.
Thank you.
Take care, Edward.
Night-night.
Bye now. Stay warm. My buddy Edward calling from Dallas. I just periodically I check the app on my phone just because I keep certain places that matter to me on my weather list. Like I said, it's 3 here. In the place where I was born, it's 16. Down on the Gulf Coast on the Redneck Riviera, it is 30. Right now in Paris, 50. raining in Frankfurt at 46. 2 degrees warmer at 48 in Amsterdam in the middle of the freaking night. Raining in Berlin at 48. And Sydney, lovely Sydney, mostly cloudy and 68. Oh, I forgot one. 18 below in Duluth. Wowzer. Tells you something, doesn't it? Tells you a lot. Should it be? I mean, is that typical? 50 in Paris in the first week of January? In the dead of night? I don't know. I don't have enough experience. There's a lot of this country that's finding out scary things about hard weather. I was checking my Facebook feed earlier today, and lo and behold, I saw a note from one of my friends in central Mississippi. 16 degrees and the power was out. Phew. Everybody be careful. Let's go back to the phones. Oh, by the way, before the phones, we jumped out to a roaring start on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge and then kind of plateaued. We are where we were before at $65 to go. $65 to go to finish off Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, the traditional mail address, should you wish to operate that way, which is fine because... Boss Man Wayne gets scared of the spiders in the mailbox. So either way, but $65 to go. Six folks, seven folks, more or less, $10 apiece or any permutation thereon. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Same to you.
Hey, what's happening, Bill?
Oh, don't even start. I just had a fun night last week with playing some music with my buddy Colin DeSalt and his bunch, and it was fun down near Akron.
Had to be.
But tonight I had some shrink walks by and starts asking me questions about, was I sure, what did I know when my birth date was? Yeah, you stupid, miserable blankety blank. It's January the freaking 1st at 1 second past midnight. And that, of course, depends on the fact that it was 1941 the first time around. Was it 41? No, what am I saying? Jesus, I am confused. 43. Because you know how it is. You guys were too busy to be making kids overseas, you know. So, I mean, because I want out of here so fast, if I had the shotgun, I'd shoot my way out of this joint. But that's another story.
Yeah, don't let him hear you say that.
Yeah, well, number one, I don't have it. And number two, with my vision, I'm liable to shoot myself out. And that's not much fun, is it? Last time I looked.
No, not at all.
You need glasses. Bill, you need new glasses for the hell out of the last pair you were wearing, you know. But these people, they come in here and they got a foreign accent, you know. They come in here with some foreign accent, like, and I don't have anything against that. But what the hell ever happened to the American doctor, for Christ's sake?
They're not working in facilities like you're in.
Yeah, I guess.
And among other things, you know, you go to medical school, everybody wants to specialize in the high dollar fields.
Yeah.
You know, literally brain surgeon. Nobody wants to be a proctologist.
Well, come on, brain surgeon, that left half of my band on the street. Sorry, fellas, but you know, now proctologist on the other hand, what was the old joke? On the other hand, there's five fingers, something like that. Forget how that.
Yeah, you're not missing a lick. You're tell the neurologist to stuff it.
Yeah, because I'm really trying to get out of here and get my stuff. Bob, I didn't realize I couldn't live without a computer that talks. It's like, what? Where am I? If it wasn't for some prime house movers and you know, your sphere of influence, I'd never get a chance to say hello. Not that I have much to say. You guys talking about the weather?
A little bit, yeah. Mainly just belly aching.
Have somebody take a quick look at October of 1950 in Cleveland.
I'm doing that right now.
Funny you. Thanksgiving weekend.
Okay, so November.
It should put up something like 22 inches of snow.
Yeah.
Over that.
There it is. The 1950 Cleveland snowstorm.
Yeah.
23 inches of snow.
Oh, yeah. It was running so bad here that the El Vernon Milk Company, boy, you remember them? They used to exist. They had to load up armored vehicles to haul milk around the city. And the streetcars were running empty to keep the tracks clear to get food around.
But that was kind of a freak event, wasn't it, Bill?
Yes, sir.
And to that,
what did they say it was?
23 inches.
Yeah, but did they say what kind of freak event it was? Did I comb my hair or something?
No, he'll be here all week. Don't try the veal.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But what's interesting, I looked it up, and lo and behold, I find some teabagger. Get this, Bill. The recent wintry weather had Ralph Tarsitano checking some old photos. He discovered these shots from the Great Thanksgiving Snowstorm in Cleveland in November 1950. Over 23 inches of snow fell, and many areas had much more. Ralph says, here we go. Strap in, Bill. It was a time in history when people didn't wait for the government to arrive. We took the task ourselves and thought it was our duty. Neighbors pitching in to help each other and the neighborhood. And I didn't need no government, right? Because everybody had an armored car with which to deliver milk.
Well, first of all, the guy isn't looking at the closeness of the neighborhoods as they were in those days. They were real close. And it was tough to some degree. But people were finding ways to get things done. I mean, the transit company was keeping the tracks clear as they possibly could. The National Guard was hauling in sleds of milk. And here's the bottom line to all you capitalist sons of bitches, or excuse me, people were not, the average person was not overcharging for stuff in those days. There was too many kids with no milk, and that was I mean, 50 was still close in people's minds to World War II.
Yeah.
And the whole system pulled together a lot more because it wasn't just some guy figuring out a way to make more money by moving milk because it was hard to move so he could raise the price on it and really clean house. That's what I think a big...
Right, otherwise known as gouging.
Yeah. It could be... I'm sure it was done here and there because there's always... some dishonest person who will, I had to throw the term musician at myself, because that's one of my favorite things is the dishonesty of people and some of the people in my own field. They're bringing out a ton of stuff here in Cleveland that's actually got me almost heartbroken. It's so good, but still it's strange. And the thing is, I've got to get that... I got to get that computer running. We have some family members who are just wonderful people who will help me set it up. And because it's not that far. It's just in sections, you know. It's no big deal. It's simple enough stuff, you know. Not as simple as yours, Bob.
Well, I'm pretty...
on that, buddy.
I'm pretty simple.
Well, you've had some tough goes with that stuff.
Oh, I was in For some reason or another, the computer that sends the stream out to the internet this weekend decided to lose its memory, and so everything, all I could do was load the defaults in the BIOS, and you know, the first thing I found out was that it had decided it was January 1st, 2002.
Oh. Great.
I mean, yeah. I felt hair growing back on the top of my, on my little bald spot. It was amazing. I lost a little weight.
Yeah. Oh, brother.
You know, suddenly Ferg wasn't asking me about learning to drive. Or. You know.
Well, there's just a few good things there. And if he wasn't asking to learn to drive anymore, look how much money you saved. I mean, supposedly.
Right.
But was Christmas good otherwise?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We had a nice time.
Yeah. That's the part
The big deal for us is a nice family meal. And we did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did that. We didn't do the big old hunk of roast beast, but we had our oysters, and that made it special.
Well, come on now. If you guys don't do a good ham, what kind of good Kentucky folks are you anyhow?
We're West Virginia hillbillies. We get the ham bone. We get the hock, Bill.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that little fact. You get the...
Yeah, the sun shines bright on their old Kentucky home, and we're in the shadows.
Okay. Because, man, that's one of my favorite things is that a good... I remember down around Petersburg, Virginia, and you'd understand this. You walk in a store... All these paper bags, what's in them, Bob? It's salted ham.
Oh, the country. Yeah, the country style stuff.
And here am I trying to figure out how to cook it. And I didn't do too good a job, Bob.
Didn't soak it?
No, they made good baseball gloves, but... didn't quite have the taste that they should have had, you know. And Jim, tonight's right on the money when it comes to electrical prices. I talked to friends of mine who were, you know, a little bit older than me, and they're retired service people from the different light companies, and they just... they sure sound like a bunch of angry ex-workers, but they just make that motion with their hands like, oh, yeah, you know, about how badly things have been handled. How is it down your way? The electrical.
Oh, it's terrible.
I thought it.
I mean, they Appalachian Power only puts as much into the actual grid infrastructure as they have to. And, no. You know, have to is a really, really... ill-defined term, and then they go to the PSC every other day begging for a rate increase.
Yeah, this constant rate increase. A friend of mine in upstate, up around Chicago, he's in the cell phone industry. In fact, he started out 20-some years ago in it, and after a while, they started cutting back on the executive-level people. And paying the cheapos and paying the executive-level people at cheaper rates. This is another way of doing things, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Keep cutting back. I don't know.
Oh, I imagine there's champagne corks popping down to Appalachian Power headquarters right now.
How come they got an increase, huh?
Well, no, I mean, they live for this weather. Because their usage goes through the roof.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, just to give you an idea of what cheap coal-fired electricity means around here these days, you may have heard Jim talking about his bill.
Yeah.
It is nothing in weather like this. It's nothing for me to see a $500 power bill.
Holy crow, you could burn half the town.
Yeah, and bear in mind, things we're not doing. not running a big electric water heater, not running a big refrigerator. We run a freezer, and we've got and every light bulb in the house is compact fluorescent, and I am a light turning off goon. If nobody's in the room, it's not going to be well lighted.
You've turned into your father, have you?
I have. I freely acknowledge it. I've become a little bit more with, like him with every hair that falls out of my head or gets pulled. But I mean, the biggest power draw is back here in the studio, because these things have to run. At least one of these computers has to be on all the time in order to send the rerun stream out. But basically, a laptop, two monitors, two PCs, and all the audio equipment, and that gets north of $500 a month.
Oof. Oh boy.
Yeah, you're telling me. And frankly, the fact that we are running in the dead of winter months, we're running space heaters.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
they are.
Tell me about that, Bob. I'm outside once.
Well, the other thing they did a while back is these power companies convinced people that maximum efficiency is achieved by installing a heat pump. Which is true as long as the temperature does not dip below some arbitrary number like 42 degrees.
Yep.
Once it's under 42 degrees, you're heating on that coil in that thing, and it's just like heating your house with a toaster.
Oh, brother.
And once it drops below and that coil kicks on, man, you can walk outside and see the meter spinning like a carnival pinwheel.
Well, one of those Ford Junkers that I was working on, crank the engine, nothing happens. Pull the distributor cap. Crank it, nothing's turning. We had to go all the way down to the base where the pin that drives the distributor was connected to the oil pump. Or shall I say, no longer connected with the oil pump. And it's 10 degrees above zero, Bob. And here I am crawling around on my hands and knees in 10-degree weather. And luckily for me, I had borrowed a kerosene heat pump from a friend of mine. You know, the kind that you lay down next to you and you stick your hand in it periodically. And if you're not careful, you stick your hair in it and you lose a little periodically. You know, that kind of mess. Oh, yeah, the old days, they had their moments that were not, perfect, that's for damn sure. And I just can't wait to get back online because I do miss. And Kevin, he's been real good keeping me filled in on a lot of things. The basketball, baseball, or football stuff is just so far this year. It's pretty cruel.
Well, that first weekend of the playoffs was pretty fun. I would have liked to have seen the Packers win, but oh well.
Yeah.
But I mean the Chargers beating the Bengals. I mean, what a poor snake bit of effort that was by Cincinnati. I mean, they were just the Bungles. They were the Bungles.
Yeah. And I got to see with that Paul Brown disease, you know. I got to watch myself.
Yeah.
That guy was so ahead of himself. I'm hoping that one of my buddies calls me in, because I got to get some talking done on some of this stuff. It looks like it should be the end of this week. Everything is going to be, and see all the house stuff is already wrapped and packaged in my buddy's trucks. So it won't be any big deal to move and set up, but it'll still be a pissoir. How do you pronounce that?
Pissoir?
Yeah, give me the correct pronunciation.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, I'm the wrong guy for that.
No. Oh, you're not. I thought you were. You're good with Spanish, are you not?
No, well, I got a little Latin.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to know if it was Spanish or if it was French that you spoke.
Oh, I don't speak either. I can mumble along. I can mumble along a little bit, and you know.
Oh, okay.
Donde está la cervecería? You know, where's the beer joint?
Ah, you're speaking the universal language.
Right. Find the beer joint. Everything else unfolds after that.
Sure, because you can find enough guys who'll... It's nothing's nicer than a bunch of drunks, you know, with an engine manual and a bunch of tires, a bunch of tools, rather, trying to help you learn how to do something. That can turn into a real fiasco at times. You haven't laughed so hard in half your life watching some of that stuff displayed. But I'll tell you what, if one of my friends, if he's still visiting, I'll cut the line loose and he'll give me a call back. And I still haven't heard from my friend in Columbus. I don't know what he's...
Oh, he's out there. He's out there.
I get a little leery of that guy. He's got one of the sickest minds in humor I know, so I got to...
Oh, yes, he does. Yes, he does.
He'll strike back quick.
Delightfully so.
Anyway, I'll let you go, but so far...
By the way, just to give you a quick giggle, he sent me a story earlier today about a preacher who drowned while trying to recreate Jesus walking on the water.
Oh, very good.
Darwin Award.
One less.
Yeah. All right, you take care, Bill. Look forward to hearing from you when you're home.
All right, you take care.
All right, bye now.
Yeah, right. Oh, you mean me when I come home from the... When I come home from the cross pond trip, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
See you, Bill.
And my friend in Southern Ohio, if he feels like calling, I'll be here.
All right. Later.
Take care now.
Bye now.
Good night.
Mr. Stress, the one, the only, the legendary. Oh no. Jug-a-Punch said, "Don't hang up, Bill." I don't know if that means I wasn't supposed to hang up or Bill wasn't supposed to hang up. Darn it. Hate it when stuff like that happens. 22 minutes before the hour, and many thanks to Dan. Dan just took care of the rest of the balance remaining on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. It has been met for the evening. So thank you, Dan. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Sal and Karen. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Jenny. And thank you, Asa. Thank you all very, very much for meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. That means we're a little better off than we were. Let's see. We got 21 minutes, and we still got more ands. Oh, God, we've still got more ands. You know, of course, that... Utah's marriage equality ruling was temporarily stayed by the Supreme Court today. The request for the stay went to Sonia Sotomayor, and she passed it on to the whole court. And the whole court said, yeah, let's not have any of that equality busting out all over or anything. Well, I think I know why. It was a ruling of mercy. Cause see, out in Utah, Stan, there's a guy by the name of Trestin, T-R-E-S-T-I-N, no kidding, Meacham, M-E-A-C-H-A-M, who, well, you remember Dr. Strangelove. I cannot stand by while communist sympathizers, communist infiltrators, steal all of our precious bodily fluids. Well, Trestin Meacham allegedly went on a hunger strike to keep the gays from getting murried up. Claims he hasn't eaten since December 21st, lost 25 pounds, presumably... He's out there munching merrily away on a Big Mac or some such, or, I don't know, maybe hoe cakes or who knows what. But he had previously said in regard to marriage equality coming to Utah, I cannot stand by and do nothing while this evil takes root in my home. Root. He said root. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. You never miss a lick, do you? He said root. I cannot stand by and do nothing while this evil takes root in my home. It is time for the state to stop wasting time. Our so-called conservative lawmakers need to show some courage and stand against this judicial tyranny. They need to exert the will of the people. In other words, he wanted nullification. I don't know, maybe he's visited South Carolina stand lately or something. He claimed he would not eat until the state legislature nullified the court's ruling. Of course, nullification is illegal, but who's counting, right? And on his Twitter feed, he was kind of cagey about whether or not he'd sat down to tiffin after Sonia Sotomayor decided that some people were still more equal than others in Utah. But he says that, you know, now the judicial tyranny has been overturned. And Jesus. So it was a mission of mercy just to keep Tristan Meacham from withering away and dwindling down to nothing. It is a mercy that passes my understanding. That's all I can say. Like I said, we've also got a Wisconsin moron. In Wisconsin, they have this creepy dude who is a member of the Republican legislature in that state. And I do mean creepy. His name is Senator Glenn, with two N's, by God, for an extra dose of his numbnutsing. Senator Glenn Grothman. And Senator Glenn Grothman has decided that this business of people not working 7 days a week is some sort of evil communist plot to destroy our precious bodily fluids. Because, see, the state of Wisconsin has a law that says you can't just work people 7 days a week. That, according to Think Progress, is unique that Wisconsin has. But it's not surprising for Wisconsin because of the nature of the Wisconsin experiment. This attempt to create a government that would serve the needs of the people, who are in turn, you know, the government. So there's a law in the books that says you can't work somebody 7 days a week. Well, Glenn Grothman understands that for the creeping socialism that it is. Right now in Wisconsin, you're not supposed to work 7 days in a row, which is a little ridiculous because all sorts of people want to work 7 days a week. Did you catch that? Okay, I read it with a voice, but let's try it normal. Right now, in Wisconsin, you're not supposed to work 7 days in a row, which is a little ridiculous because all sorts of people want to work 7 days a week. Operative phrase being, all sorts of people want to work 7 days a week. What sorts of people, Glenn Grothman? Oh, wait, people that the company tells that they will fire them if they don't work 7 days a week. I mean, who needs a day off? Please, really, honest to goodness. I mean, what are you going to do? Just lay around in your entitlement hammock out in the 27 below, munching cheese curds, maybe a little summer sausage, a few swigs of brandy, and the next thing you know, the whole business community has just gone to hell with all those people indulging in all that leisurely activity 1 day a week. Jesus. Back in 2009, two-thirds of low-income workers said they had experienced a wage law violation in the previous week alone. Wage theft. Yeah. Wage theft accounts for more stolen money than all money stolen from banks, gas stations, and convenience stores combined, according to Think Progress. Federal wage and hour violation actions increased by 400% between 2000 and 2011. And guess what? Even if you prevail, you may not get everything that's coming to you. And that's probably why you're going to wind up, you know, there's all sorts of people that want to work Sundays. You ever seen that famous union bumper sticker, "The Weekend brought to you by organized labor"? Yeah. It's got to go. I mean, can you imagine the power swearing that a Glenn Grothman engages in every time he sees a bumper sticker on a car with America's Dairyland on it, on the license plate, and "The Weekend brought to you by organized labor"? And Glenn Grothman says, "By God, not for long." Oh, Jenny. Ew. Jenny writes from Wisconsin. Glenn Grothman. Jesus, that name just sounds like... Grothman. You know, put a little talcum powder on it and it'll be okay. Jenny says, "He was my senator. I'm so thankful that I moved." I'm sorry, that's just funny to me. "I'm so thankful that I moved." Imagine all of your neighbors voted for that ass. Oh, really? No, really, you do. You just look out and, "Oh, I'll bet you did. Oh, I know you did." Ew. He also wanted to classify single moms as child abuse. He still lives with his mother and always looks for someone to buy him a fish fry. So gross. Grothman, not the fish fry. Friday fish fry is just freaking awesome. If I ever introduce the world's most awesome tartar sauce up in Wisconsin, there will be a Friday fish fry revolution. In fact, had I not, at the last trip up there, I was actually going to make a batch and take some with me just for Friday. But I figured I would probably get body cavity searched or something with a jar of it on my carry-on bag. "I'm sorry, sir, what's that?" "Tartar sauce." "Oh, no, really, that's what they..." We've been warned about the Al-Qaeda tartar sauce dodge. Oh, a note coming in from Granny T in Tennessee. Subject line, "A little cool spell." Hi, Bob. Hi, Granny. "Well, you told me once upon a time you were here in July working on a dig at Pinson Mounds, and you found the heat and humidity just sort of unbearable. Tonight's forecast over there on the mounds, 0 to 6 degrees Fahrenheit, -15 wind chill factor. Woe be upon us now, and when the utility bill arrives. Warm thoughts and good cheer to you and the family. We shall continue to persevere." Signed, Granny T in Tennessee. Well, just remember, Granny T, the one valid thing that Calvin Coolidge ever said was, "Nothing can take the place of persistence." Might even look up the quote. And I'm sure maybe some speechwriter wrote it for him, but it is a really inspired here it is. It's a piece of inspired thought. Here it is. "Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful people with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan, 'Press on,' has solved and always will solve the problems of the human race. Kind of hard to argue with some of that stuff. The sad thing is, I get the idea that the party to which Calvin Coolidge belonged understands that a little better than we do. But not the Horn family and not Granny T. We shall persevere. What did William Faulkner say? Man will not only survive, he will prevail. I think he wrote that when he was drunk. Randy in PA says, someone gave me a hand-dipped chocolate-covered Oreo cookie for the holidays, and when I ate it, I said, whoa, that is a business model. God, I saw something on my feed the other day. I even pointed it out to Ferg, and he went, whoa. Kind of the same thing Randy said. Someone had taken two Oreo cookies, or taken an Oreo apart. Two Oreo cookies had been taken apart, and the side with the white stuff on it, they kept those two. I presume they ate the blank cookies. But in between that, they wedged a Reese's cup and dipped that in chocolate and let it solidify. That's just obscene. But probably yummy as well. Have they kicked off in the national championship game yet? I don't know. Let's see if we can work one more in. And God, how do you pick him? Here, let's go international on this one. Just to remind us that right-wing conservative morons are not the exclusive province of the United States of America. We go to India for Sessions Court Judge Virender Bhatt. He was hearing a case of a 29-year-old Indian man who had been charged with raping a woman, and he let him walk. Virender Bhatt, the Honorable Virender Bhatt, declared that the 29-year-old man was not guilty of rape because right before he raped the rape victim, the 29-year-old rapist said, after I am done raping you, I will marry you. This, Virender Bhatt found to be a compelling argument for telling the 29-year-old rapist to go and sin no more. Only not in those terms. Wrong book. The Press Trust of India quoted the Honorable Virender Bhatt as saying, when a grown-up, educated, and office-going woman subjects herself to sexual intercourse, she does so at her own peril. Good God, please don't let the... Do you realize if this man immigrates to the United States, he will immediately become a rising Republican superstar? Probably get to be governor somewhere. A little more detail on the case. The woman had filed a complaint of rape against the man, who was, of course, an employee of a multinational corporation back in May of 2011. Nice to see the Indian justice system works every bit as well as ours does. Justice system. Oh, I made it funny. And the woman had alleged that the man had sex with her on several occasions by promising to marry her. And Virender Bhatt therefore ruled, Every act of sexual intercourse between two adults on the assurance of promise of marriage does not become rape if the assurance or promise is not fulfilled later on by the boy. 29 years old. Boy. The woman must also understand she is engaging in an act which not only is immoral, but also against the tenets of every religion. No religion in the world allows premarital sex. Pity the folks at Anonymous can't send him a little bit of the holy wisdom of the flying spaghetti monster, because, you know, their heaven is a beer volcano and a stripper factory. I'm thinking if you get a beer volcano and a stripper factory in heaven, premarital sex might be okay. I'm sure it's okay. My God, there are pirates involved. But not rape. Rape is not premarital sex. Rape is rape. Oh, jeebus. We got a long way to go. But just by way of a follow-up, speaking of rape, one of the Steubenville, Ohio rapists is walking the streets. He's out. 9 months in a juvenile detention facility was enough. I guess maybe it had something to do with Candy Crowley and that other woman weeping great big crocodile tears about what will become of his life. Oh, my aching back. Maybe he could go clerk for Verinder Bhatt. Well, there we are. End of the program. Thanks, everybody, who makes all of this happen. Jesus, we didn't even get to the Tennessee guy running for governor for the right to shower with his raccoon. How complicated has Moran Monday become when you can't even reach that? Thanks, everybody, who makes all of this happen. You do. This is your network. And it is your determination that has kept it going year after year. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and John Fox working away down in Australia. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. That's where you go if you want to be a part of ending the apocalypse in Appalachia. If you want to, you can check my Twitter or Facebook feeds. You'll find a link to the op-ed that I published over the weekend regarding the ACE Act and politicians in West Virginia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And here comes Rick Smith, live on the horn.